It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Your grandbaby.
Oh, that's my favorite sound these
days. It is an absolute messy spitwad exchange, but it's very funny. You were doing that at the Super Bowl.
I was, yeah. You guys were over here for the Super Bowl.
We did. We had a glorious time. It was a good game, too.
We had a house full of critters. My goodness, the whole house.
I know.
Was
it was fun.
It's an interesting ball game. Great fellowship.
My
kids hung outside.
And, it was all good.
Your team. Yeah, you were so responsible for what happened.
I had no responsibility whatsoever, but it was fun because I figured I was going to go home. Me and Jonathan were going to go home sad puppies because everyone else wanted the Cardinals.
It's one of those things in life where the wrong team wins.
Oh, really?
It is. You got the Cardinals should have won.
Why?
They just should have. It just been a better story.
Okay.
I'm all about the story. It'd been a much better story. But anyway, this is my little... That's disgusting.
That's
sound.
What I have to say with what
that's
you just
disgusting
said.
Disgusting sound, but I haven't so much fun with that. Lindsay, our little one-year-old, little over one now, granddaughter, that's how she communicates.
Her language. It is her language.
Learning to talk. That is... She does two things. She does... And she does a la, 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 la with her tongue. It's funny. Her older sister can't do either of those two things. Her tongue just doesn't work quite the same way as Lindsay's. But Lindsay started, that's the first sound she could mimic, intentionally mimic back to somebody. And she starts, she go, and I'd lay on it, and she'd bag me. And it's like you said, it's wet. I mean,
it's
glasses.
Wet. Yeah.
The you're glasses go.
Windshield wipers, pal.
You don't want to do it right after she's had strained peas or something. really bad idea. But she's across the room. She comes to the house and she's across the room and I just go, her eyes just light up and she turns and she looks at me and she gives it back to me. And it really, what's been fun about it, I'm saying it's not the best sound in the world. I admit that. But what's fun is watching. I think we learn, we talked about hearing from God last week and that whole adventure and, yeah, I think we just learn to hear God like these little girls of ours, these little granddaughters, learn to talk. You just communicate at whatever level you can. I'm sure sometimes all of our sounds to God sounds like, but he might just kind of back and suddenly.
I'm really glad that he does do that.
Suddenly we're not alone in the world.
Yeah.
The Lindsay is communicating as a la, la, la. Now she's got mama and dad as she's starting that down the road. But it's just, it's familiar sounds, she's communicating, and with it, when her face lights up, when her and I play this little game, and what's even best about this game, she can be on someone else's lap with green beans, strained green beans.
Oh, yeah.
And I can go, and she fires all over them. So this
remote control.
This game has all kinds of good things in it.
That's wonderful applications. I'm going to be more aware of that when we hang out.
I didn't see Holden Lindsay because I was hoping that we'd have that moment.
Yeah,
right?
Now I know. I figured that out.
But you know,
I did have a couple of brief conversations with her, though.
Interesting the way we learn to talk. The way she's learning to communicate with the world. And what I think is just fabulous, particularly for a little entity like that child who gotta know stuff's going on in the room that I'm not part of. Gotta know it. You know, there's conversations going on. People
say, she has a quizzical eyebrow look that just know you know.
People
that
saying stuff to me and I don't know what it is.
And then she
finds a way to communicate. And it's just the smallest little thing, but it beats out that crying, screaming, wailing stuff. So I'm having a lot of fun with Lindsay and her and I are, that will quickly go away, I'm sure. But right now, it's a lot of fun, and I love her. Just she lights up because she knows it's Grandpa coming at her.
See, that's profound. I mean, if we could translate that into our own thinking as we're learning to have a friendship with God. I think most people, that's a light switch. Either you hear or you don't. And it's like, I'm sorry. There's a whole lifelong process.
This is
of
a relationship.
Yes. Excuse me. It's about relationships, stupid.
Between God-breathed dirt that just yes. scooped out from the earth and God breathed life into us, and the creator of the world. And somehow he wants to bring a connection. And sometimes it happens in the most silly and absurd ways. It yeah. does. But celebrate that. The creator of the universe is making contact with you, and then you're going to learn how to live inside that contact with him. And to me, that's the whole essence of the gospel, and in my Father's house are places to dwell. Come dwell there.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Well,
love it.
The simple little phrase, you know, in groanings too deep for words, I kind of like, guess what? That validates communication at the simply heartfelt level. It validates that. And it's like, if I can simply feel, I'm going to send my feelings up to God and they get heard. And I want to be able to say, God, I don't have language. I really don't know right now what I need. I don't know the way forward. I don't know my way out. I don't know how I got here. I mean, life can do that to you where you're just going like, you know what? If I'm honest with reality, I don't get it right now. And that doesn't mean I'm by myself.
Yes. And it doesn't mean you're stupid. It doesn't mean any of those other things we always think, well, I'll never get it. I'm just a big moron and all that little pity party stuff we go into. It just means this is a process of me learning how to connect and live inside the reality of who God is. And it goes beyond just the language. It's not just hearing words and listening to God's voice. It's not just that, because I think a big part of this is learning to live inside of what it is to be loved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think all of our language about religion is you're loved when you earn it, dadgummit. And so we're
when you do it right.
We're raised in this whole performance-based idea. And when God just begins to invite us inside of a love relationship with the creator of the universe, when we're not performing well, when we're still messing up and struggling, even with sin and failure, that's the hardest language to live in. It's not just words and speaking and listening and discerning things. It's about how do I live as a loved child of God instead of how we've mostly been trained to live as unloved.
Yeah, and so many people, I mean, it may just be a lens I'm looking through, but I just see left, right, and center this absolute crying, screaming desire for somebody validate me. Somebody tell me I have significance. Somebody tell me I'm important. And it's like, you know what? What a glorious thing if I could start from the standpoint that just says, guess what? Game over. I won. I am loved. Now can I get on to the real part of living life?
Oh, then you're going to love this.
Okay.
We're going to crawl back into history a little bit. This is actually taken from a book called No Man Is an Island by Thomas Merton. This is one of those classic.
Thomas Merton, he's like one of the super old dead guys.
He's one of the super old dead guys. I didn't know he knew this about God. Someone sent this to me. I think it was a Dave or a, ooh, gosh, I probably got the name wrong. Sorry, whoever sent this to me. But someone had just finished reading He Loves Me. And they just said it had been such a transforming book for them. And then they were reading No Man Is an Island. How about that? Go from Wayne Jacobson to Thomas Merton. And this is some excerpts from No Man Is an Island. Listen to this. You'll love this. This is what he said. Our ability to be sincere with ourselves, to be genuine, honest, sincere with ourselves, with God and with other men, is really proportionate to our capacity for sincere love. And the sincerity of our love depends in large measure upon our capacity to believe others loved. Most of the moral and mental, even religious complexity of our time go back to our desperate fear that we are not and can never truly be loved by anyone. Isn't that what you just said?
Yeah. Wow.
Our whole religious complexities and our moral and mental anxieties come back to the fact that we fear, we have this desperate fear that we're really not going to be loved by anyone.
Yeah,
and that drives so much of the way we act and live.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've talked about this in different podcasts before, but there was a point at which I think God totally drove this home for me, probably for the first time in my understanding. And it was at a time in which, you know, I'm looking at my kids, and it's just a series of they're not behaving at all, and I'm really irritated as their dad. And the Lord kept saying, you know, in the exchanges, Brad, I'm not like you. And at first, I was just totally offensive. I'm just going, well, thanks a lot. I'm really trying really hard. I'm just feeling put down and measured as if, F, you know, you just failed. And it's more like, no, Brad, you don't understand this. And I realized I was trying to wrap my head around God's heart, his nature, his character, and the only frame of reference I had is my best self projected to the nth degree. And yet, when my kids behave...
And your view of your best self. Not yeah. even your best self.
My whatever limits that... whatever yeah. profound
That's
limits...
so limited.
That places yeah. on all that. And it's like God was simply trying to say, Brad, your scale, I don't fit on. You're trying to measure me on the basis of thy limited self and perception. And that's not going to work here. And he wasn't putting me down. He was simply trying to bust my little ruler and say, you're looking in the wrong ways. I'm not like that. And finally, there was one moment where it just all of a sudden, it's like light pierced my soul. And I went, oh, my goodness. Like, that's what you're talking about. Because I think locked up in that little perception is what I talk about as the fear of and the craving for intimacy. I so badly want to know that I'm loved. And to be able to sort of experience that. But I'm aware of myself. And if everyone else knew what I know about me, I'm afraid they would reject me. I know me. There's reasons why I would say, And I'm afraid that others might know that. It's only the love of God that can wrap your arms around that and put that argument to bed. And that's what I think is being talked about there. Like, if I can't start there, I don't know how any of this works.
And that's why I love that little chorus, the one who loves me, the one who knows me best loves me most.
Yeah.
That's a great statement. If you could say, because I think we all have that. If everybody knew the real me, down to what I think about and where
You'd
I've been,
me.
Where nobody would end up liking me. But the one who knows all of that loves you most.
And when that hand grenade explodes with truth and revelation inside you, you get the freedom of actually starting to know and be known.
But there's more. When we
oh,
back,
more.
To, back to Merton, when we consider that most men want to be loved as if they were gods, that's a great statement.
Yeah, oh, wow.
It is hardly surprising that they should despair of receiving the love they think they deserve. So part of the reason why we don't feel loved is because our criteria for love is self-serving. We want to be loved as gods. So even the biggest fools must be dimly aware that he is not worthy of adoration. And no matter what he may believe about his right to be adored, he will not be long in finding out that he can never fool anyone enough to make him or her adore him. And yet our idea of ourselves is so fantastically unreal that we rebel against the lack of love as though we were the victims of an injustice. Our whole life is then constructed on the basis of duplicity. We assume others are receiving the kind of appreciation we want for ourselves. And we proceed on the assumption that since we are not lovable as we are, we must become lovable under false pretenses, as if we were something better than we are. The real reason why so few men or women believe in God is that they have ceased to believe that even a God can love them. But their despair is perhaps more respectable than the insincerity of those who think they can trick God into loving them for something they are not. This is great stuff.
Wow.
This kind of duplicity is, after all, fairly common among so-called believers who consciously cling to the hope that God himself, placated by prayer, will support their egotism and their insincerity and help them achieve their own selfish ends.
Will wow. support their egotism and will help them accomplish their selfish
ends. They cling to that hope. That's what the whole religion...
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
Then he says this, if we are
Go
to
Merton.
Love sincerely and with simplicity, we must first of all overcome the fear of not being loved. And this cannot be done by forcing ourselves to believe in some illusion, saying that we are loved when we are not. We must somehow strip ourselves of our greatest illusions about ourselves. Frankly, recognize in how many ways we are unlovable, descend into the depths of our own being until we come to the basic reality that is in us, and learn to see that we are lovable after all, in spite of everything, not because of.
Wow.
He said, this is a difficult job. It can only really be done by a lifetime of genuine humility. We must accept the fact that we are not what we would like to be. We must cast off false exterior self, like the cheap, showy garment that it is. We must find our real self in all its elemental poverty, but also in its very great and very simple dignity, created to be a child of God and capable of loving with something of God's own sincerity and his own unselfishness. Man, that's deep stuff.
That is. That's wild.
Not every day Thomas Merton writes the God Journey.
Way to go, Thomas Merton.
This is a great email. To really face the fact that on the basis of just who I am not lovable by performance, but loved because he created me.
Yeah,
and he loves me, even what got twisted up by sin. And religion teaches us that God doesn't love you when you're twisted up. God's only going to love you when you get it all right.
You know, true repentance, I've come to look at it as having two looks. It's like, you know what? I've got to see things for what they are. I've got to be honest with, you know what? Yeah, boom. Guilty as charged. That's what you did. Those are the things that are there. There's got to be that kind of honesty. But that alone leaves you in despair. That alone can camp out in condemnation. And you're just going, wait a minute. There's a deeper look of repentance that's got to see, yeah, in spite of all of that, here's what God sees when he looks at me. Yes, I come clean. True. You got me right on that. But I also need to be able to see that look that instills that love and value of my essential self. That isn't about anything that I've done. Great. It isn't about some worth I've brought to God. See, here's why your love for me is valid. It's like, no. Blob of God-breathed dirt and mud. But I'm loved. And I don't know if people remember this. Remember the movie Hook with Robin Williams?
Yes.
Do you remember that one?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, this is absolutely
beautiful.
You
watch way too many movies.
I know.
Nothing redemptive in Hook, I'm sure.
I'm sorry. I did a whole sermon on Hook.
Gran Torino, that's another story.
This is so glorious. In the midst of this older, you know, Peter Pan, he's forgotten who he is. And he can't act like one of the little kids anymore. And there's this, in the midst of him just being a total jerk and that being revealed to everybody, all of a sudden, this little kid comes and takes his hands around Robin Williams' face and is trying to smooth it out. And he's looking in at him. And it's just this wonderful, quiet moment. You're like, we have no idea what this little kid's doing. But he's playing with Robin Williams' face. And then all of a sudden, there you are, Peter. And it's just this absolute overwhelming look of love that this little kid's, there you are, that's the guy I know. And I don't know, when I saw that, it was sort of like, it just pierced my soul.
Man, I'm quoting Thomas Merton and you're quoting Peter Pan.
I know.
What's the deal with that?
I'm not Thomas Merton.
Well, I hear you, I'm not either. But I do like his point that until you get down to the fact that I'm not loved when I'm pretending to be what I'm not.
Absolutely.
When Jesus says to the crowds, he looked out on the crowds with the disciples, he said he saw them as harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd.
Cast down.
Religion teaches us to look at our sinning selves as these perpetrators, co-conspirators in sin, these horrible things. Which really, I think, makes it difficult for us to find the love of God until we put our lives together. When Jesus said, harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd, he's saying something. I wonder if God looks at our sin like we look at sin like a teenager doing something they've been told a million times not to do because they're just an idiot. Instead of maybe a six-year-old with cancer. Maybe that's how God sees sin.
Yeah, and the disease that, you were born with.
And the fact that a six-year-old has cancer doesn't make you love the child less. If anything, it endears you more to that child. I mean, Sarah and I were watching a little bit of that American Idol the other night. Now, I really go from Merton to Peter Pan, not at American Idol. There's this one gal that was singing on there, and her little backstory, her dad dies when she's 13.
I know.
And then what? 3 years later, her mom dies.
She's living in a van with her hippie dad, then all she's got nobody.
And Sarah and I just looked at each other. I mean, just Oh, my gosh. Does that make her unlovely that those things have happened to her? No. It makes her even more endearing. I mean, just you want to root for her.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
He goes on. Okay. The first step in this is Merton again. For those of you just joining us, No Man is an Island by Thomas Merton. The first step in this sincerity is the recognition that although we are worth little or nothing in ourselves, we are potentially worth very much because we can hope to be loved by God. He does not love us because we are good, but we become good when and because he loves us. If we receive this love in all simplicity, the sincerity of our love for others will more or less take care of itself. Strong in the confidence that we are loved by him, we will not worry too much about the uncertainty of being loved by other men. I do not mean that they will be indifferent to their love for us, since we wish them to love us, the God who loves them in us, but we will never have to be anxious about their love, which in any case we do not expect or see too dearly in this life. So the freedom to be loved by God sets us free from trying to get everybody else around us to fill that space.
Oh, that is so profound.
So, we want other people to love us. Yeah, I do. I want my daughter to love me. I want my grandkids. I want people I meet to love me. But I don't need it. I don't have to go fight for it or be anxious about it.
If you don't live with that vacuum inside being filled with the love of God, you will suck everything else in the universe into that space in some desperate attempt to fill it.
Absolutely.
And the relationships that you have get so warped because there's no way for you to live agenda free. I've got to get something out of you. I need to get validation. I need to get approval. I need to get whatever. It's like, I got to pull it. And you just go like, people, whether they have language for that, feel it. I know when someone's trying to suck something out of me, you're just like, what? What?
Yeah.
And it just, it gives you that anxious, I don't know, I'm not at peace in this one.
It absolutely destroys any hope of real relationship.
Yes, because I'm just a tool.
Because once somehow into our relationship comes my need for significance at your expense, or my need to feel loved, but you're, and so I've now got to pretend to be what Brad wants so that I can feel like Brad loves me. That, and this is so much religious relationships are caught up in this pecking order game of who's loved, not loved, who's respected, not respected, that there is no hope of a real relationship happening.
They're mutually beneficial dysfunctions.
Of finding ourselves, the commonness of our human experience is we are all broken in so many ways. And that we are loved just simply because the God of the universe, and he doesn't like, okay, I made you, I have to love you. It's God's love for us, I'm convinced, is like the first moment I saw my first grandchild. I didn't sit in the hospital room with my daughter as she's got this new little, and this little thing's a blob, it's not doing nothing, it's just, ooh, it's all wrinkly and red and doesn't even look good. The moment I saw that,
it's not blue.
I didn't walk in there saying, you know what? This is my granddaughter after all. I'm going to need to learn to love her, and I'm going to act loving toward this child. The moment I saw her, I loved her. I loved her with a deep, deep love. I don't think people see that when we talk about God made us. It's almost like, okay, well, he made us, so he has to love us.
God, he's good. He has to. He's like, there isn't the sense of the power of the intelligent choice behind it, as well as the reality that, you know what? There's nothing you can do to stop this.
Or the affectation behind it.
Yeah. Like,
this love really is affective. God has great affection for me, for other people, for every person on the planet. It's not, okay, I love everybody. You happen to be somebody, so I have to love you. It's God has great affection.
I am, not anything that I've done.
Yeah, not because I'm good.
Yeah.
But if I can live in that love, I will be good. I won't have to live with all the psychosis of filling up the thing. So he ends this way. This is back to Merton. The whole question of sincerity, then, is basically a question of love and fear. The man who is selfish, narrow, who lives little and fears much that he will not be loved, can never be deeply sincere. Even though he may
say that again.
The man who is selfish, narrow, who loves little and fears much that he will not be loved, can never be deeply sincere. Even though he may sometimes have a character that seems to be frank on the surface, in the depths, he will always be involved in duplicity. He will deceive himself in his best and most serious intentions. Nothing he says or feels about love, whether human or divine, can safely be believed until his love be purged, at least of its basest and most unreasonable fears. But the man who is not afraid to admit anything that he sees to be wrong with himself, and yet recognizes that he may be the object of God's love precisely because of his shortcomings, can begin to be sincere. His sincerity is based on confidence, not in his illusions about himself, but in the endless, unfailing mercy of God.
Wow. If that doesn't mean that, you know, Paul's prayer that we might be rooted and grounded in love. I mean, that's its anchor right there.
Who knew God was saying stuff about truth a couple of generations ago? The old people. That's amazing to me. This strikes to the heart of it, because when we talk about New Testament community and people who are going to experience, not share religious practices together, but share the depth of religious community.
Agenda-free living.
To experience the depth of real Christian community.
Yeah.
Then the reality is, what the core of that is sincerity. Either you are who you put yourself out to be, or you're living in lies and illusions, and you always have to pretend and keep the guard up and keep getting from people what God's not feeling for yourself. This is the kind of thing that I think strikes at the close of heart. If we're ever going to know community as believers together, it's because
we're going to start there.
We are loved enough by Father to live in sincerity with each other. That the duplicity is disarmed, not because we finally perform well enough that I can pretend to be, I can now be who I really am, but because I was loved by God when I was an imposter. I was loved by God even inside my duplicity. And now that I know I'm loved just like I am, I no longer have to get something from you. I no longer have to pretend to be something I'm not with you. And now, real relation, this no man is an island. Now, you don't have to be an island. You don't have to live just me and Jesus and me and protected, walled off with all these protective, defensive mechanisms because you're afraid of being hurt by other people. You will be hurt by other people.
Oh, yeah, you could guarantee that.
Yeah, absolutely. So people think, oh, if we get this
but
right.
I don't need to get from you what I can only find in God.
And finding it in Him, I can then simply love the people God brings through to my life.
Whether you hurt me or not.
Whether they love me back. That's the point. The point is so many people are looking for these wonderful, deep New Testament community relationships. When you finally are, and this I think all the this is Merton's point, when you're finally embraced as loved by the Creator, it doesn't matter whether other people are filling that hole or not. That hole's not there. You get to live inside that. Now you get to enjoy what love you get from others.
Mm.
And you get to love everyone who crosses your path without thinking about what's in it for me. Am I going to get returned? Am I going to get hurt here? Are you going to give as much to me as I've invited you to dinner 3 times. You've never invited me to dinner. So I don't think, you know, you don't have to get into that game. Because Jesus said, I just want you to love people like you've been loved. And having been loved by Him. Yeah, I think this loving others isn't so much work.
Not if it starts where the Bible kind of says it does. We love because He first loved us. I don't really think about, gee, I got to learn to love that guy. I, you know what? Whenever I'm thinking that, I'll guarantee you the reality is, no, I'm not loving him. I have no emotions of loving him. And it's not real. It's all trying to choose and have discipline.
What it means is I'm going to learn to pretend to love him. That's what that means.
Yeah, that's all it means.
Which is a long way from sincerity. It is the road back to duplicity.
It's a profound long way. And then those two roads never meet. The only way I do a good job of loving people is when I'm living in the awareness of that I'm already loved. That's where my overflow comes. When I start drinking from that river, it splashes all over and spills out into every other relationship in my life. And it's like, it isn't, gee, you think of the beer commercial. I love you, man. It's all trying to get their beer.
I love you, man.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know,
I love you, man.
It's all, I'm gonna give the illusion of love so I can get what I want from you.
Yeah, and even if it's not beer, even if it's just fellowship. or a word from the Lord, or a little dose of loving.
Well, I look at so many people's hunger, especially when the disillusionment with the system happens. Then it's like this, well, where will I find fellowship? And I'm just like, you know what was, you know, as I was listening to you share all this, it was making sense of the last 7-10 years of my life where you're just going like, you know, there's a period of detox where as you gathered in this system, and unfortunately the values of so many of it is the fact that you perform and you're validated. You do well in this environment and you will get what it is that you need. Or, well, it's not satisfying to me because I'm not getting what I need. Because I'm trying to get it from people who can't give it. But when all of a sudden the illusion of that and its emptiness all of a sudden overwhelms you, it's like, well, forget it. I'm not doing it anymore. Then you're stuck in that place, well, I'm just all by myself. And it's like, well, you know, just pray that God will. I think God kind of, you know, puts you in your own little corner to say, guess what? Till you get from me what you need, until you and I get hooked up with reality, you're gonna get confused in every other relationship you're striving so desperately to have, because you're gonna try to get from them what you can only find.
That's why in life and religion is such an uphill struggle from the very beginning, because we don't. This is, I think, if we really loved people and understood the gospel, the first thing we'd want a new believer to understand is that you are loved.
Period.
By God.
Period.
You got to learn to speak that.
No subordinate clause.
It may start with, but you've got to learn to speak that language. You've got to learn to listen to the love language of Father. When you get that, then you'll be able to participate in relationships. But what religion is the substitute. Not really giving people that loved relationship with Father. We're going to try to fill that void with all our programming and rituals and religious stuff.
You behave these ways, you serve these ways, and we will love you.
And don't trust the emotions, because if you don't feel loved, it doesn't matter. And it does matter. Religion is such an uphill battle because we're teaching people to live in the duplicity still. Instead of, no, live in the unfailing mercy of God for you, where you are today. That's true for you, whether you know it or not. And I have people, I've got email this week from somebody. I read about you. I read about Brendan Manning. I read about these people and their love relationship with God. And I've never had it for myself. And I've been an elder and I've been this and that. I'm going, see, that should have been step one. Because that guarantees religion will fail. Because we're trying to get religion to fill a hole it can't fill. Ever. Ever. And people will try harder and then even feel worse about themselves.
Yeah, try harder and do better gospel.
This is so key to everything that we're trying to help people understand. The sincerity that rises out of, I'm not afraid I'll be unloved anymore.
Well, you look at Ephesians, the letter to the church at Ephesus in Revelation, it's like, you've left your first love. And it's like, that is not a performance language of, oh, if you just get back to loving. It's kind of like, you know what? You guys have tripped over the threshold and gone out of the reality of where you need to be living. You've thought that there's something more important than love. That first love. And what is that first love? Is it, oh, God's the highest and best. God is first place. I don't think first love is my best performance of love. I think it's, he loves me first. And if you don't get that, none of the rest of this works.
And that's what God wants you to get, even if it takes some time. That you move the affection of the God of the universe. He has affection for you. He's
you
not just
do.
Yeah. And what more is there?
There is it.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.